Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. For the first time since purchasing the team, Daniel Snyder, the owner of Washington's professional football team, is considering changing the name, seen by many as a racial slur. It is the latest in a series of moves by big businesses to end branding and marketing based on racial stereotypes. And tonight, we're looking into that issue, not just in professional sports, but across the entire business community. My guests are Wes Hall, WHUR announcer and sports analyst, and Dr. Carrie Ann Hamilton, CEO of KAH Consulting Group. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Wes, Dr. Hamilton, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me, Harold. Thank you.
Let me start with you, Wes, and as a matter of fact, let me read to you the statement that came out on July 3rd from the football team. And it reads in part, the team will undergo a thorough review of the team's name. This review formalizes the initial discussions the team has been having with the league in recent weeks. But hold on. Because I want to go back to a statement that was released by Quaker Oats last month in reference to Aunt Jemima, or Aunt Jemima, okay? And the statement says that Quaker Oats has decided to retire, and I repeat, retire the name of Aunt Jemima because it is based on racist stereotypes. Both of these, big business, billions of dollars at stake. Why, from your perspective, what's the difference?
First of all, I almost have to answer this personally more so than professionally. For me, I was raised on the philosophy that there's nothing new under the sun. So if I was to apply that to this situation, I would find whether it be in relation to this football team or Quaker Oats, there was nothing new that they learned at these times. The information hasn't changed. We always knew that those images were offensive, and they have always been inherently. What changed, in my personal opinion, is the amount of pressure and or social currency that would make it equitable for them to change. So when I hear statements that say, you know, we're going to thoroughly review, I personally wonder, what do you need to review that wasn't available to you 24 hours before you made that announcement? It was the social climate that dictated that. Now, true, I am glad that these changes are being made, but I cannot play myself foolish for not looking at the nuances of what created the motivation for it.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that, because, of course, all of these things happening as a result of the horrific killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Carrie Ann, talk to me about what kind of conversations were going on in boardrooms around the nation in the days and weeks after this happened, considering, just as Wes just said, this information has been around for a long, long time.
Right. Thank you. Thanks so much for the question. And I think I agree 100% with Wes that we are experiencing a reckoning moment nationally and even globally in the aftermath of George Floyd's unfortunate killing at the hands of police. And so we are in this moment where at an individual level we need to assess, but corporations are now being called to make changes. And that's because of the bottom line. Certainly, they're corporations who live their values every day and that their values live out in their brand and how they treat their customers. But that is not the lion's share of corporations across the country. And so Quaker Oats, NASCAR retiring the Confederate flag, I think all of this is being spawned by a movement towards change, but that isn't new. What is new is the bottom line. And right now, consumers are saying, we will vote with our dollars. And so today, 60% of consumers will walk away from a brand, not spend money with a corporation if they don't reflect their values, will boycott those companies. And that's the big difference between 1999, when Mr. Snyder acquired the team, and the last few weeks with FedEx saying, we will divest if you don't make a change. So it's a bottom line question coupled with this reckoning moment we're experiencing and we're a part of.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about how big businesses are ending branding and marketing based on racial stereotypes. All of this the genesis of this, of course, being the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. If you have a comment or a question about this issue, give me a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Not to mention, I certainly would like to know what you think about the possibility of Washington changing the name of the football team to something else. Do you see the current name as a racial slur? I'd like to hear from you. Wes, let me also, talk about this. The last time we did this show, and this was several years ago when this issue came up, when Daniel Snyder said that I will never change the name, and he has said this consistently. To be quite honest, there were people who called in who did not see the name of the team as a racial slur. Do you believe that that is changing? And if so, why or why not?
I believe that those who want to give an ear to the words and the emotions of those in their community will be swayed, or will at least be susceptible to it. But those who have dug in their heels and, have pretty much, picked the heel that they metaphorically are choosing to die on, have said, this is the name of the team. That's the tradition appeal, the populism appeal, and they think that's enough to carry over. I personally have always found the name to be offensive, and I cover the team. And in some ways, I find myself vexed daily on how I use the verbiage in describing the team, but it is their official name, and so therefore I'm bound to do so. But when it comes to swaying fans, those who, basically, let me just put it in plain English, those with a heart understand I don't have to execute a public poll. I don't have to, examine the halls of my heart to understand that you should never use any ethnic group or individual, let alone a pejorative slang slur, as a representation or a symbol of any commercial commodity, moreover, an NFL football team.
I just got an interesting tweet. It says, I will only feel like we are successful when corporations post before and after pictures of their leadership teams, board of directors, etc., and they are diversified. And I do not mean with a bunch of Kanye's and Clarence Thomas's. This from Legal Power, which is an interesting tweet. About that particular issue, we are in a place right now, Dr. Hamilton, where you may have corporations looking around their boardrooms when they never did before, and realizing that there are no people of color, that there are no women in strategic decision-making positions, and or women and people of a woman of color, for example. You know a lot of organizations start moving folks around because you get a twofer right now. Is that a white corporate guilt, or is that just finally somebody saying, knocking on the door, looking, or corporations looking in the mirror and saying, we're finally hearing you?
So I think it's both. I think there's a recognition that's happening now. There are more conversations, which I'm encouraged by, but words are significant, but not sufficient. And so statements have been made, And then there have been companies who have been called out for not living those values. And so it comes down to both your what you say and what you do, the proverbial, just do the right thing. And I think when it comes down to the substance, companies will need to recruit, retain, ensure that their boards are diverse, ensure that their staffing is diverse, and not just at the most junior levels. And so we started this conversation, this national conversation, Memorial Day and the days after George Floyd's death. And it started out as a conversation about police brutality, but quickly became a conversation around equity, diversity, inclusion, justice, fairness, and all of that's layered. So we can't have a conversation about police brutality without a conversation around racial equity. We can't have a conversation about representation without communities that partake, Redskins fans, and I just said it, like the national football team and its fans, right? Diehard supporters, but there are also individuals who feel very offended by this. And so we should hear them. I agree with Wes that we don't need a poll to do the right thing. But we also need to, I agree with the tweet, that we need to do more than issue statements or change names. Brands are more than logos, right? Brands reflect value.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and WHUR. Yeah, we are in a bit of a storm right now, and so these kind of things happen. We're going to continue our conversation with Wes Hall and Dr. Carrie Ann Hamilton. Are you both there?
Yes, I am.
I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for bearing with us. Can't do much about Mother Nature. One of the things I wanted to mention to Wes, the thing that really started this movement with the football team is that FedEx, one of the minority owners, and now yesterday two other minority owners are trying to sell their stake in the football team. Money talks. Talk to me about that, Wes. I've got about a minute before the break.
All right, I'll make it real quick for you. So we're talking about money, right? So the people that are involved are Robert Rothman, who is the chairman and CEO of Black Diamond Capital, their investment group. Dwight Schar, who's the chairman of NVR, which is the fifth largest home builder in the country. And Fred Smith, who is also the chairman and CEO of FedEx. They own 40% of this team. This team was valued by Forbes last year at $3.1 billion. So the valuation that they have at the table right now is $1.24 billion. If those guys decide to walk away, there's no business model that can survive with that much of their capital being withdrawn for them. So they've got to be able to find a way to replace that. And the reason they said they were leaving is because they're just not happy being partners with Snyder, of course, for obvious reasons with his position in regard to this name and logo.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that. Again, Dr. Hamilton, money talks, and this is a prime example.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the pressure, right, the pressure from consumers, the pressure from investors really pushed the Washington team to go in a different direction. These calls have been made for decades. And so now the absence of that necessary capital means change is paramount and hopefully is on its way. Should have happened yesterday, 20 years ago.
Amen to that. Amen.
We lose Carrie Ann.
No, I said should have happened decades ago, so it's well overdue. Yesterday, if not sooner.
There you go. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation on Sirius XM Channel 141. We're talking about a big business making a change from the use of racial stereotypes for their marketing and their branding. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR, but this conversation continues on Sirius XM 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about the big shift of big business and changing branding and marketing practices based on racial stereotypes. My guests are Wes Hall, WHUR announcer and sports analyst, and Dr. Carrie Ann Hamilton, CEO of KAH Consulting Group. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Wes, as we're talking about Washington's football team, and I go back to that issue about reviewing the name. Mm-hmm. Why not just, why are we seeing this move come so slowly? Is the team or the owner, is he buying time to pick a name, or is he just kind of dragging his feet because he had said 13 years ago that he would never change the name?
Well, I, being a terror of a child that I was, if you ask my mother, she would always tell you she never saw a positive behavioral correction come swiftly. to answer directly, things take time. You don't quickly, quote unquote, cave, as some of the naysayers in these comment sections that I've been reading have been saying. You don't cave quickly because there is a bit of, face to save with this. And so in a sense, yes, I do believe that there's a degree of, finding out exactly what the next moves would be to go ahead and make the change, also considering what names or branding as a whole might be advisable to change. So, yeah, I kind of understand. It's kind of like watching someone who said no forever finally have to say yes, and how long it takes that hand to creak open before they finally hand you the keys that you've been asking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Carrie Ann, How difficult is it really to make this change? Is it, as we've seen, for example, with the Cleveland Indians, it took them a while, but they got rid of the racist icon of Chief Wahoo, and now there are discussions about completely changing the name. But then you have, as I mentioned, you've had Quaker Oats, you've had Uncle Ben, and you've had some other food-related companies that have just said, "We're done. We're out of here. We're dropping this stuff right away." Why is this? Does this have to do with ego or just resistance to change when it comes to corporations?
So I think on the side of the Washington football team, we've had a situation where the owner has said, majority owner has said, I'm going to dig my heels in, will never happen, all caps, put it in lights. And so there's that scenario. And then there is for 100 plus years, we've had this brand and now we're going to retire it because we can't redeem it. So there's that end of the extreme, right? So we're going to keep our name while it's offensive, and we're going to retire it because the moment and the movement is of such that we just can't continue in earnest. But you ask about difficulty. It is difficult. It is costly. And so as a business, you have to make the determination around when we make a name change, just in the best of circumstances, not in an offensive name, to change a name is really, really costly. Over the course of time, a brand invests millions, or in the case of corporations, billions of dollars to build up their brand equity. And so to change one's name, it means, in the case of a team, uniform, the whole outfit. Wes can tell us all the costs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Costs. It's very
difficult. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Absolutely.
Have you seen those ugly throwback uniforms that they have, and they've done the hell?
I mean, them, Harold.
Say again.
Harold, still pay for them.
Who?
That merchandise value is extreme, especially in a team that has been in this market for as long as they have been. We're not talking about, no offense to the Carolina Panthers, who were only founded in 1995. That's only a 20, almost 30-year history. The Redskins are double, triple that. So you have to understand, she's absolutely correct. The brand equity that has been invested in this thing is generational. you cannot buy that type of marketing through generations. And it is definitely something that you have to seriously consider whenever you take an option for a rebrand, like she said, whether it's due to nefarious branding originally or not.
Well, considering how they performed last year, I don't think they can do any worse. But
do you want the number? Do you really want their score? I'll tell you. Okay, look, they've won 41% of their games. The Redskins' record since Snyder's had the team is 132-187 over a total of 319 total games. All right, they've won one of their five playoff appearances. The last one was in 2015. The last time they won in the playoffs was 2005. They've had five plus 500 winning seasons since 2000.
I think with those odds, you change the name, right? So there's some moral reasons for changing the name. There's some performance reasons for changing the name. And so it's difficult not to make light of it. It is, in addition to the moral rationale for changing the name, it is costly. Their implications. You've got to take a full audit of all the things you need to change. And you also need input from the community, whether it's alums, current players, fans. Again, change it to interim name, the football team of Washington. But it would be helpful if, taking aside this offensive name, what are the other values? What are the assets that this brand brings to this community? And it would be great to hear from the adoring, loyal fans of a non-winning team in Washington to give input on the new name.
Yeah.
I would love to hear that, too.
Yeah. And as I said in the very beginning, that, you know, the last time we had this conversation, a lot of people calling in saying, I don't see anything wrong with the name. And that unlike, some of the other, parts of the country, while we may have, we may have a Native American community here, and we do, but not the kind of strong Native American representation that we have as we begin to move, west of this community, and people who, as we saw, for example, on the 4th of July, when the president was speaking before, Mount Rushmore, we have, in South Dakota, you have this huge Native American community there who are very, very vocal. And so, certainly with the passing of George Floyd, while not a Native American, but you do have an issue as it relates to just racism in general that seems to have struck a chord, not only with the football team, but big business, Carrie-Anne.
Yeah, absolutely, Harold. And I don't need to share an ethnic DNA, right, with my brothers and sisters who are Native American, but I think it really comes back to the fundamental premise that if one of us is being treated unfairly, if there's injustice being vetted at one of us, we're all not free, right? And so I think this awakening is coming at a moment where, in the case of George Floyd, we saw the lack of humanity. How those officers treated him was, gutless and inhumane. And so the shared humanity that, if this is offensive to one, it should be offensive to all. We need not share ethnic background or DNA to realize and to acknowledge. And I think that's the first step, Carol, is to acknowledge the pain that a name or an action is causing to others. And I think that's the moment we're in.
So let me, ask you to, Carrie-Anne, to put on an even broader thinking cap, because why didn't we see this kind of movement in 1991 when Rodney King was beaten by the LAPD? He survived that, unlike George Floyd. And and prior to 1991, issues about brutality against black people by police was not new. And then after 1991, black people were saying, well, I told you so. Well, after what happened to George Floyd, people were saying, I told you so. And we can go on and on and on talking about the black lives that have been lost at the hands of police officers. And we said, I told you so. So why is this different?
I'd call Steve Jobs and he's not with us anymore, but I'd say thank you for the iPhone and modernizing the phone camera. I think it's the presence of cameras, the pain, the anguish, the brutality that we saw up close while having our morning coffee or having dinner with our families of a police officer for almost 9 minutes. Take someone's life in front of our very eyes, I think triggered a movement that is raging on to this day. It's been 3 weeks. And I hope it doesn't stop. Foot on the gas. We can't stop, right? And I think there is naturally some cynicism about what's happening. Are brands being exploitive? Are we taking advantage of the moment and it will just die down? But thankfully it hasn't, and we all have a role to play in that. But I think the advent of the camera and being able to see it, whether it's live streamed or posted months later, as in the case of the Ahmaud Arbery situation down in Florida, it took 3 months. But within a day of that video being released, those individuals were arrested. So the phone and just increased awareness of what's happening and this movement is here. I don't even want to know why. I just want it to keep moving and that we have measurable and tangible change.
Mm-hmm. Wes, as it relates to pro sports in general, are we going to see, whether the team changes its name or not, are we going to continue to see the kinds of move toward diversity and equity? I'm not talking about you're just hiring people of color just because. Say again?
Almost basically perfunctory symbolic changes where it's, are we move this person to say that we move this person without actually empowering this person to make tangible change within their position?
Exactly.
Totally aware of that. Pardon me, first of all, I want to say thank you to Dr. Hamilton for her statement about the use and the power of the cell phone. Technology, thank God for technology. But to speak to this point, I want to add to something else that has dealt with it, and this is how it correlates to professional sports, especially in particular football. The COVID-19 pandemic brought America something that America was not prepared for but definitely needed, which was no distractions. In crippling sports and sending us all home within the confines of our houses and having only our televisions and our phones to keep our attention, we were able to lock in and really see things for what they were. So in that became awareness. Within that awareness, with the amount of time given, became focus. And through that focus, we have created accountability. And I think that is the tangible thing that you're feeling in the air when we wonder and say, is this different? What about it? This is making this different? It is the fact that the proverbial sleeping giant has been awoken. And you have an entire generation of children who have grown up from the moment they took their first breath. Their second breath was, mommy, what's the passcode to their phone? And so now they have become vocal, they are empowered, and they are unyielding because this is the world that they were born into. They don't know any different. All of us, I'm fair to say that we are all Dewey Decimal children. So we've all been through the Dewey Decimal system. They have no clue of it. They know apps, tweets, retweets, posts, and likes. But they also know how to share information at lightning speed and the ability to comprehend it and apply it positively. That's what makes this different, a little bit different. So in regards to pro sports, what we're seeing is a new age where there is accountability for coaching training modules, for executive and GM training modules. who are you feeding? Who are you training? How long has this person been in this position? Did you actually, instead of just performing the Rooney Rule, did you actually consider these people, these different potential coaches? Eric Bieniemy last year was in a great conversation. He's the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. And many people were thinking he should have been a head coach for many of the open jobs that they were available. None of them. None of them went to him. And that's a crime and a shame when you have the offensive coordinator for a Super Bowl winning team not being offered a head coach position in the National Football League the following season. Totally unacceptable.
Yeah, because traditionally you start, I mean, that's the conversation in the week after the team wins, where, you know, commentators, Wes Halls and everyone else, they may say that offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators could get, if you'll allow me to use, you know, the football metaphor, picked off.
Yeah. You know, from, I like that.
You know, from the coaching staff. And so, yes, that is the case. And to that particular point, we've seen what has happened with Colin Kaepernick. And so now the NFL's commissioner said, yeah, he should get a shot. You know, as a result of, you know, of all of this, do you think that he will? And do you think that, and how do you think he may be received now that, again, he is in a position to say, I told you so?
In one sense, I cannot say that he won't or that he will, because 2020 has proven that everything is fluid. Whatever you thought yesterday might not happen tomorrow. So just be prepared for that. But moreover, will he get the shot from a team? Which team, which owner, which fan base is willing to embrace Colin Kaepernick and just not necessarily the man, but the air around him?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when Philadelphia took the flyer on Michael Vick post his dogfighting conviction. The question wasn't, can Michael play? The question is, can the organization and fan base embrace the things that come with Michael at that time? And so it's really about finding the proper fit in an organization and an owner and a coaching staff that is willing to embrace the fact that you're going to get bombarded by Colin Kaepernick questions. You're going to have certain fans in your comment sections on your social media platforms swearing, disavowing that they'll leave you. You know, you're going to get all of that with it. But the question, as Dr. Hamilton has put so eloquently before us, the question is more of a moral one than anything else. Where will you be? On what side of the fence will you stand when the question of right or wrong is put before you?
Unless he starts winning.
Now, all of a sudden, if he starts winning, he's the second coming. Now, you know that, right? Like, and he's instantly Ali if he starts winning. And adversely, if he starts losing, then all the naysayers get to say, I told you so. But you don't do things for the appeal. You do the right thing because the right thing is the right thing, rewarded or not.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dr. Hamilton, let's talk about that in a Colin Kaepernick scenario, and a pro team makes a decision to pick him up. What are the ups and the downs? How do they address a storm of controversy, criticism? Do they step up and say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to give him a shot? Does the owner step in? You know, how does a corporation that just happens to be a professional football team handle that kind of crisis under these circumstances, under the current environment?
Sure. What it comes down to, it's much like hiring talent, right? We will start with, is this person a good fit? Do they have what we need as a team, as a company, as a corporation, as a campus? Like, does this person bring what we need? Is this person the missing piece? And if the answer is yes, and you hire Mr. Kaepernick and he joins the team, you'll share some value system. You'll share a dream for the team, and you're moving forward together in good faith that this is how we want to move forward as a team. And you communicate that at the announcement, you communicate that in your statement, and you really focus in. You can get asked lots and lots of questions as a corporation. you choose what to answer. You weigh in on what your message is. And the message is, hey, we're excited about Kaepernick joining our team and our community and our fan base. And we don't have to address the controversy. This is a new chapter. We're really excited to have him and play football, right? And amen. So it's not that simple, right? Because there will be comments. And so you may lose some fans, but if you make decisions that are grounded in your values, what is right, what is just, what is fair, then if you have some naysayers, they may sit out a season, they'll be back, or bye-bye. And so I think that's why it needs to be grounded in a team's value system, because otherwise you'll be swayed by the latest tweet. And we see what happens from the White House, right? And
oh my
so that's
God.
That's not what we want. The president right now believes that this is a political statement and political correctness. And so every team needs to assess, every company, every corporation really needs to assess what is our value system, acknowledge where we are today, where we want to go, and authentically communicate with stakeholders and your fan base about where you are and where you want to be. And people will honor that, but don't issue statements that are out of alignment with your practices, whether it's your hirings, your promotions, your pay scale. And so that is why a number of companies have been in the news lately, because their values and their performance don't match up with their brand promise. And that is problematic.
Well, let's talk about that. No, go ahead, Wes.
I was going to say, can we add the caveat of being consistent? Because in regard to what I said earlier and tying it to yours, this generation, ourselves included, because anybody that's on social media knows this rule. The internet doesn't forget. You're absolutely right. The authenticity that needs to be conveyed has to be consistent on top of that. Because at any given moment, if you deviate from that, you'll have compromised more than you were ever aware of. So I just wanted to add that.
So let's talk about that. You know, this conversation, we've been talking about football teams. We've been talking about food products. Both of them, very, very high-profile businesses that touch every aspect of American living. But there are businesses, billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar businesses, where the air is so rare that most Americans never know about the racial or gender makeup of its leadership. Why should they make a change if no one has ever asked them to make a change before? Because nobody knows who they are. You know, whether it's a Wall Street, you know, whether it's a, you know, a financial institution, you know, a trading company, aerospace, any of the, you know, engineering firm, you know, that makes, you know, bombs and bullets that may not have any people of color, may not have any women, and they're there. We know they're there, and they have always been there. You know, why should they make a change if nobody ever asked them about it before, Carrie Ann? And you know, would this be, you know, an altruistic exercise?
You know, it really should come down to both one's moral compass and your bottom line. But really, the definition of integrity is to do the right thing when no one's watching. And so I'm hopeful that as a result, and this is the optimist in me, I'm hopeful that as a result of this movement, that everyone, every company, every foundation, every sector, including our own media, advertising, public relations, there is no sector is unscathed. There is a Me Too 3 happening as it relates to race and some of the racist histories and legacies of some corporations, companies, entities, et cetera. And so my hope is it's coming. It's just a matter of time. Look around now, make changes now, because it's the right thing to do But it's not just altruistic. It ultimately impacts bottom line. Investors are making choices about where they invest based on a number of the criteria that you just outlined, the makeup, the board, gender, race, LGBT. This is a movement. We can't escape it, and so companies ought to embrace it and make the investments and the changes that are needed. And it's a multi-year effort. We have to be consistent. I agree with Wes. It's not flipping a switch, because one would think then you paint Black Lives Matter on the street, and that is the embodiment of change. And that's symbolic. Symbols are important, but we also need substance, and where we invest shows our values.
Should black companies then worry about their cream of the crop being picked off by majority companies, Wes?
It would be the best blessing in the world to have. That's what we've always ultimately wanted, is to make sure that the best of us were in the best positions for their own individual and collective success, whether it be in our companies and or not. And that is the message that a lot have either never heard or do not fully comprehend. There's no selfishness in the black community about our talent pool. It was about our talent pool being rejected and not validated for the talent that they possessed and the work that they had already put in. That was the issue. So, no, I know many black business owners, myself being one. I'm also a child of one. I have no problem with anybody I'm affiliated or associated with being proverbially poached to go to a Fortune 500 company. I say, go well, do well, show them what you got, and make sure you keep the door open for the next person behind you. Absolutely.
Real quick, for Washington's football team, we've got some best names, worst names. USA Today threw out three red tails, which was a nod to the first black fighter pilots in World War II, warriors and hogs. Carrie Ann, what do you choose? What do you think?
Oh, I'm not excited or inspired by any of those. And then Red Tails, Detroit has a team called the Red Tails. No, I mean, we can
the
have
Wings.
More.
I got you, though.
The Red Wings.
Oh,
obviously,
Red
you're
Wings.
Not a hockey
I'm
fan.
I'm not a sports person, but I'm not inspired by any of those names. I think the community can generate something a little more exciting.
Okay, Wes?
I love the sentiment of Red Tails. However, I'm not a fan of using people, because what are we having this conversation about? About the normal name, using people. So let's not do that. Red Hawks I've heard, but it's still too close and it's frankly lazy. I've heard Renegades as well. Hogs is not even considered. It's a part of a song from Love Them Hogs from the 80s when they were winning. I get that. Warriors, to me, it plays on the alliteration and it allows you a tent large enough to include all manner of honor, whether you're honoring Native Americans, whether you're honoring the military in all facets, if you want to include firemen and our frontline people. All of those are covered under that tent of warriors. And it works, and it's easy, and it makes sense. Children can say, Washington Warriors, like, that makes sense. Plus, we've already got a Warriors in the NBA, and that name is already branded and familiar with winning, so it would be smart to change the course of your football franchise with adopting a name that's synonymous with winning in another sport.
I like Red Tails. I always have.
I knew you were going to say that.
I always have liked that. And, I know you said this is about, people, but I do think that it does, certainly honor, a segment of the absolute best of the black community, and another opportunity for us to remind the broader American public of the greatness of our community. And, so, yeah, that's just me.
No, I agree with you. I think it does an excellent job in honoring them. I just don't want to see an honor inevitably become commercialized and lose that luster.
Oh, there
like,
you go.
It's part of the game. So that's why I'm like, please go to Warriors and nobody will mess it up.
Yeah, there you go. Wes Hall and hockey fan Dr. Carrie Ann Hamilton.
That's right.
I love it, Doctor. That was awesome.
Dr. Carrie Ann Hamilton, thank you so much. I appreciate you talking to us. And as always, stay safe, you guys. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, July 6th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.